Hey yo, and here we go with another edition of We Talk Wrestling with Addy and Mo. Hey yo, I'm Addy.
Hey yo, I'm Mo, and this week we have a very special episode of We Talk Wrestling. Do you care to fill in everybody on the concept, Addy?
Yeah, it's what we're doing is we mentioned it. We had a couple emails and tweets about it. It's called a trip down memory lane, and Lodi is what we're calling it. Essentially, what we're going to do is we're just going to take a year and just look at it from start to finish. This year, we've decided to go with 1989.
Yeah, great year to start. One of my favorite years ever in wrestling, 1989.
The Mega Powers.
The next show we'll do, I believe, is a 1997, which is also one of the great years. So we're going to start off strong. Yes, 1989. This is probably the most innovative new concept in wrestling podcasts ever, though. This is the NXT of wrestling podcasts, this concept, isn't it?
I was going to say this is the gauntlet match.
Oh, yeah, absolutely excellent. All right, the very first start of 1989 was an event actually taped in December 7th of 1988. But the first major TV thing that happened was a Saturday night's main event.
Oh, okay.
And it was actually one of the most, probably one of the least eventful Saturday night's main event in history.
Way to start off strong.
Yeah, well, that's the way the year started. But it built well afterwards.
Okay.
Because it had Brutus Beefcake versus Ron Bass in a hair versus hair match.
Okay.
Hulk Hogan with Miss Elizabeth defeated Akeem with Slick by disqualification.
Wow.
Ultimate Warrior, the champion, defeated the Honky Tonk Man for the defended the title 5-minute match for the Intercontinental
Champion. The Intercontinental Champion. Okay.
Yep.
Yeah, you said the champion.
The Intercontinental Champion at the time.
Right, okay.
Tito Santana defeated the Red Rooster with Bobby Heenan.
Okay.
And Mr. Perfect, in about 3 minutes, beat Hall of Famer Coco Beware.
Coco.
So, any thoughts on that? Do you have any memories of that Saturday night's main event at all? Or that, let's say, it was really one of the least eventful ones.
I was going to say, I really have no memory of it outside of this was building the, with the Twin Towers and the Mega Powers were really the ones that were.
And that's why that match probably with Hogan and Akeem went to the disqualification instead of having a pin in it. It was, that's kind of the.
That's right. They were still keeping Akeem and Boss Man strong.
Yeah, exactly. So, and that led into the Royal Rumble, which was about one week later.
And that was
January 15th. That was January 7th that one aired, and January 15th, the Royal Rumble 1989 occurred.
The first Royal Rumble on pay-per-view.
Yes, the first Royal Rumble on pay-per-view.
Okay.
And this was a different one. I don't think people have a lot of memories about this one either. I mean, but we will just throw it up here quickly.
I have a couple.
Jim Duggan and the Hart Foundation opened the show with defeating Dino Bravo and the Fabulous Rougeau Brothers with Frenchie Martin and Jimmy Hart in a 2 out of 3 falls match. And that was actually a pretty good match.
That's right, yeah. And that was actually one of the themes back in Royal Rumbles is to do those either tag team match or six-man matches, 2 out of 3 falls. They did that a few years in a row, I think, didn't they?
That's right, they did. They did. And again, you'll see this. Nowadays, we're used to seeing the championships defended. We're used to seeing guys who have matches and then compete in the Royal Rumble. And back in 1989, it was really such a new concept, and they weren't doing that. So that's why you had a match like this. I do think. I can't recall. Was the Hart Foundation, Jim Duggan, actually in the Royal Rumble afterwards or not?
You know, I don't know. Was this a 30? This was a 30-man, right?
It was a 30-man one, yeah.
I honestly can't remember.
Rock and Robin defeated Judy Martin. And that match actually went 16 minutes. A 16-minute women's championship match.
With Rock and Robin and Judy Martin.
Yes, yes. They were filling time, folks.
They were not the Jumping Bomb Angels.
No. King Haku with Bobby Heenan defeated Harley Race with Bobby Heenan.
No. Was that really? Did Bobby Heenan was in both corners? Was
that's,
it still?
That's what my research said. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and in a singles match in about 9 minutes.
I thought this was the this was Harley Race's finale.
I think so. Yeah.
It was because they moved the kingship over to Haku. Haku, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it might even have been that Heenan was going to go with whoever won as his king. I think that might have been the angle, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
And then the Royal Rumble, do you remember who won the 1989 Royal Rumble?
The return babyface Big John Studd.
And the last elimination?
Was the man who bought number 30.
That's correct.
The Million Dollar Man, who had drawn a high number, and then I believe it was Akeem that had number 30. And so DiBiase had gone over to Slick
And purchased
the number 30. That's right.
So that was a Royal Rumble match of itself. Went about just under an hour and 5 minutes.
No, and my memory's hazy because it was either 89 or 88. I can't remember. I want to say it was 89 where was Axe and Smash of Demolition not numbers 1 and 2 in this?
I can't recall, but that sounds familiar, because I know they were in 1 year, and I don't think it was 88, because this was the first pay-per-view one, and Andre was number 3, that's correct,
and Andre
yeah.
Andre was number 3,
that was quite a moment, because those two
awesome.
Got in the ring together, and you're wondering, are these guys actually going to fight? And then they started fighting, mm-hmm. A, getting over that the guys were badass and didn't care, and B, getting over the fact that this was something that meant something, that they would fight your friends, and then they, out came Andre, and the two of them took Andre down, again looking really strong, because Andre at the time, you were like, Andre still had that aura. Hey, he could take any team.
Well,
he's
it was
so
your
good,
big
you know?
Monster against your monster tag team, and it was
yeah,
just like,
and they were all heels.
Were they?
I believe so.
Demolition recently turned babyface because in the 88 Survivor Series is when the Powers of
that's
Pain.
That's right.
They did the switch
that's
with
right.
Fuji. But I just remember you hear the da 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 for the man who drew number 1, and then they said let's find out who drew number 2, and then you hear da 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 da, and it was like oh my god.
That's right. That's yeah. right.
So that
was a surprise.
And
back
in
this time, I didn't get a chance to see it live on pay per view or closed circuit. This event, I remember watching it, but it was such a different era that you didn't have a chance to. I didn't know the results or memorize the results. Even if, well, might have been in a PWI magazine.
I read them in WWF magazine.
Maybe, but I just recall sticking that tape in, it coming out, me getting it like the first day, being you know lined up at the waiting to see this thing.
4 months later.
Just excited, putting it in there and hearing the first music and the second music and going, oh, cool. So and back when wrestling could make me pop. So after that, the next event was the main event number 2. Now this is where it really starts to pick up, because
business as you would.
Yeah, absolutely. Because this is some of the most memorable angles, and this is where they pulled the trigger on the Mega Powers exploding.
The Mega Powers exploded. Yes.
On this night, in a singles match, Andre the Giant in a dark match defeated Jake Roberts.
Yes.
And another dark match, the Fabulous Rougeaus defeated the Hart Foundation.
Right.
Warrior defeated Greg Valentine. These are all dark, right? And they have a lot of cool. I'm just thinking, I would love to have been there. You got the Demolition defeated the Powers of Pain. Brainbusters defeated the Rockers.
And that was actually when they talk. Yeah, and you talk about those matches with Andre and Jake in a dark match. And,
yeah.
And you talk about, and this is where he's very underrated as the Ultimate Warrior against Greg Valentine. Is Warrior used strategy here, because that match actually went 43 minutes, so Greg Valentine never got a chance to get warmed up.
Well, and if it hadn't, it would have ate into the TV tapings. So that, thank God.
No kidding.
Thank
eh?
God.
No kidding.
Brainbusters versus the Rockers, Briefcake versus Perfect, Jim Duggan versus Dino Bravo. That's the first one I could have missed. But, I would have loved to have been there live for those folks. I think they got a treat and an excellent card. And then we got to the main card. Now I'm going to talk about the second match first, because it was a match that they put on TV for a reason. And it had a purpose. It led to something. But Ted DiBiase with Virgil defeated Hercules.
Against Hercules. Now, did they go off the air with that one, or did they go
that
off
was
the
second
air?
Match, yeah. Now, I'm not sure if they went off the air with the stuff that happened backstage.
Maybe.
And that is the whole point about Memory Lane, is we're not going to go back and rewatch them. The whole point is, what can you remember from that era?
Yeah.
What sticks out? What left a lasting memory in us when we were, I think I was 15 and you were 12 or something like that at that point? Or?
I was 11. I hadn't turned quite turned 12 yet, I believe.
Yeah, I think I just turned. I was either 14 or 15.
And you talk about memory lane and what you can remember is I can. I'm sitting here now in our palatial studio, and I can remember vividly sitting on in my parents' basement on their red couch that they had, watching the TV with my brother and just popping huge when Savage whacks Hogan with the belt, and they're doing the backstage.
Well, I mean, I remember watching it, and I was the opposite of watching and going, oh, no, come on, Hulk, come on, yeah. And you knew it was coming, because they had started to plant the seeds of the jealousy that was eating up Savage earlier.
Well, this is one, again, they knew at WrestleMania 4 where they were going for WrestleMania 5. Right?
Yeah.
So
yeah. So anyways, Ted DiBiase defeated Hercules, and I think that was kind of a surprise because this was just coming off the angle where DiBiase had attempted to purchase Hercules and turned Hercules' face.
The contract to be his slave.
Yes, and so I kind of thought the baby face would go over. But Ted DiBiase did go over in that match, and in hindsight, the correct move, obviously, he's a much bigger star.
I don't know.
And then you got
had a hell
but
of a birthday.
The big talk a little bit about the Mega Powers. Hulk Hogan, Randy Savage defeated the Twin Towers, Akeem, and Big Boss Man with Slick. I'm sure this match you remember.
Oh, God. I mean, it was just so... I mean, well, first of all, it Jive Soul Bro played. So,
always
I mean,
great.
It's always going to stick out. But this is one where... where was it? I'm trying to remember the spot here. Savage was on the apron, and I don't even remember if it was Akeem or the Boss Man had pushed Savage off, and Savage went off into Elizabeth outside, knocking Elizabeth down and out, and so then they picked a Savage back up and put him back in the ring, and so Savage was the legal man, and as they continued to beat on him, Hogan went over and consoled Elizabeth and was looking at Elizabeth, and eventually, like George Steele before him, picked Elizabeth up and carried her to the back, leaving, of course, Randy Savage by himself.
And back in that age, a man two-on-one against two other men, that was...
Well, and two men that had a total combined weight of about 900 pounds.
Yeah, yeah, and who had been pushed really well. Right? So it actually... It was a move where you understood Hogan's point of view and why he did it, but to this day you can debate whether or not morally he's doing the right thing and whether or not you blame Savage. Savage was upset. He's watching him walk away.
Well, I don't know
in the ring, there was a moment. He's watching him going, what are you doing? And Hogan's walking away completely unconcerned with Savage.
That's right.
Almost tears in his eyes, carrying her. He's just so concerned. And you're going, and you have conflicting emotions watching it. I remember thinking to myself, why isn't Savage as concerned? Or shouldn't Savage be the one walking away? And is it right to leave your partner? You know, there was so much going on.
Hogan
right?
just going out. They're totally unconcerned about Savage, only concerned about Elizabeth. So it was a shoot.
And Savage ends up winning the match by himself. He was the champion at the time, the world champion, having won it.
No. You're going no, because that's wrong. Because Hogan comes back.
Oh, that's right. Hogan
and
did come back.
Stands at the apron, and as
that's
they're beating on him,
Savage
he puts his
then?
Hand out. He puts his hand out to tag him, and Savage climbs valiantly after, you know, double noggin knockering the Twin Towers and going over, and Hogan puts out his hand, and Savage smacks him in the face and does his over the top rope jump and points at him and does this. He puts his, like, this is a video
his hands out, yeah.
Puts his hands out.
Yeah,
and,
this is not a
walks,
video podcast.
And walks to the back. I know, I'm getting all the mannerisms and stuff down. Great. But
yeah, that our eyes, arms open, hands out look that he always did when he pointed and his mannerisms, and I'm sure everybody knows them.
And then channeling the 11-year-old spirit of John Cena, Hulk Hogan beats both Twin Towers.
That was right. Hulk Hogan's the one who beat both
and
of them.
And then comes to the back.
And you were wondering at the time, was Savage going to the back because he was concerned with Elizabeth? Or is it just that he's pissed at Hulk? What was the point? So it was just a tremendous angle. And then it picked up and got even better.
Oh, yeah.
It got to the backstage.
On the
what
gurney
happened there?
Well, Elizabeth, of course, laid out on the gurney. And Savage, and the best part was when they cut to the back and Savage is talking to Elizabeth and she's saying, go back there. And he's going, no. And he starts to, and that's where the seeds are going and the jealousy is coming out of Savage. And he starts talking about Hogan, right? You know, Elizabeth is laying on the gurney, but it's all about Randy and Hulk, right, is the issue. And he's going on about, well, you don't understand, Elizabeth, it's all Hulk. You know, he's got that for you. And she's going, oh, go back out there and help me. He's like, no, and we're just going to make sure. And you know, and he's not concerned about Elizabeth.
No.
But he's not going back to help Hulk.
And
right?
Hulk now comes to the back, and he's looking for Savage.
Yeah, what was that about? And
you know, he's you see Savage, he's pissed off. And it was really the first time I think I'd seen it. You see it now all the time in Raw, a camera following guy into the back,
right.
back room. It wasn't something you saw in 1989 every single week. You know, this
right.
backstage, somebody in a locker room, somebody had a camera following him, looking for somebody. This was something I, you know, new to me.
Yeah,
at
well,
the
it
time.
Was, yeah, and oh, but I mean, and then of course they have their confrontation, and like a heel, Savage backs down, but then you know, and Hogan turns to talk to Elizabeth, you know, talk some sense into him, Wiz, please. And then, bam, from behind with the belt,
yeah.
You know, Savage comes in and Hogan goes over. And of course, you know, keeping with the fact that it's a shoot, Brutus Beefcake runs in to help Hogan. And he's like, get him out of here. What's wrong with you?
That's right. Hogan was laid out and he was hurt. I don't think he bled. I don't believe he did.
I don't believe so. No, he didn't.
But it came across and it was so intense. Hogan was intense. Savage was so intense. It looked so forceful.
And I
think
that's when he first uttered the infamous words,
well, he cut
it
after this.
Lust in your eyes, Hogan.
That's right. Because after this, they cut a promo with Savage.
Right.
Asking him about it. And that's where he says, you got lust in your eyes, Hogan. Yeah, that was.
See him. Everybody can see him.
Yeah, and one of the great promos, and he was just such a great heel at this point. But also, he had a point of view, and you understood where he was coming from. It was great. It was so intense, and it led to their next pay-per-view event.
Well, and that is the thing, is that it gets to be. You get to see his point of view. So that leads to the. What's funny is that the next pay-per-view event is not until April.
That's the thing.
And it's WrestleMania 5. So maybe.
But we do have some stuff that we're going to talk to before that, because after this event, the next event goes to. The next event goes to the. At the time, WCW, NWA. We know it as NWA at the time. And it was the Chi-Town Rumble coming up. On February 20th, but before that, they had a Clash of the Champions, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and that was on February 15th. So
what a great name for an event.
It is a fantastic name. I think WWF should steal it, or WWE.
They should. Maybe they can have a Stone Cold Steve Austin, Vince McMahon cage match.
Well, this event was Clash of the Champions, St. Valentine's Day Massacre, February 15th, 1989, 5 days, really a warm-up for the Chi-Town Rumble 5 days later, and the Midnight Express defeated the Russian Assassins.
And before you continue with that, how great is it that this, and this is just a historical touch base moment with, was this the NWA still? This isn't even
this
WCW.
Is the NWA still,
so,
1989.
So this is right at the tail end of the NWA, though.
It is, yeah.
When they die. And,
really close.
And this gets mirrors WCW when you have a Valentine's Day Massacre on February 15th.
All right, so the Midnight Express defeated the Russian Assassins.
Okay.
Butch Reed defeats Stephen Casey. Lex Luthor defeated the Blackmailer.
Not Lex Luger?
Oh, what did I say, Luthor?
You said Luthor.
Oh, him too.
Okay.
Now, Lex Luger defeated the Blackmailer. NWA United States Champion.
Not Mike the Blackmailer. That had to have been an upset.
Oh, it was. It was. It took 12 minutes and 53 seconds.
That's awesome.
I know. NWA United States Tag Team Champions Mike Rotundo and Dr. Death Steve Williams defeated the Fantastics. Ricky Steamboat defeated Bob Bradley. Rick Steiner defeated Rip Morgan.
Rip Morgan, eh?
NWA World Six-Man Tag Team Champions, the Road Warriors, and Tenryu defeated Rotunro, Kevin Sullivan, they fought to Rotundo, Kevin Sullivan, and Steve Williams to double count out.
Okay, so double duty then.
Yeah.
For the Varsity Club there, because the U.S. Tag Champions also
Because Sting, Junkyard Dog, and Hayes, they all stormed the ring, so... because Sting and JYD and Hayes were originally slated to face Road Warriors and Tenryu, but were locked in by Kevin Sullivan before the match. And this is pre-Vince Russo, folks. And an in-ring interview, Ric Flair had an interview that resulted in a brawl with Ricky Steamboat, where Flair ends up out of the ring and lost all his clothes except for his socks and trunks.
Really?
Yeah.
This is before Vince Russo.
This is before Vince Russo. So kind of, what are you thinking about? What were your thoughts? I mean, we didn't get it. It was very difficult to get NWA content here in Calgary in 1989. So,
We didn't get TBS until 1992. So we wouldn't have, I didn't see this clash. I mean, my bigger memories are going to be 5 days later.
5 days later.
For the Chi-Town Rumble, because...
And 5 days later was considered a great event. And that's the thing. 1989, arguably with 1989, was in-ring Ric Flair's best year ever.
And I may have a new favorite. I'm going to have to look this up, because I've never seen the match with the Blackmailer. but knowing that he took Lex Luger to a 12-minute, to the limit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I need to see this.
So Chi-Town Rumble. Michael Hayes defeats Russian Assassin 1, and that took 15 minutes.
Of course it did.
Sting defeated Butch Reed in a 20-minute match. Midnight Express, Bobby Eaton and Stan Lane, and Jim Cornette defeated the original Midnight Express, Jack Victory and Randy Rose, and Paulie Dangerously in a Loser Lee's NWA match. That was a hell of a match.
Yes.
Yeah. Mike Rotundo defeated Rick Steiner with Scott Steiner for a singles match for the NWA World Television Championship.
Title. That was also a hell of a match.
Yeah. Lex Luger defeated Barry Windham for the NWA United States Championship.
How long was that match?
That match went 10 minutes and 43 seconds.
So the blackmailer took Lex Luger to the limit more
than Barry Windham.
Than Barry fucking Windham.
The Road Warriors, champions.
Okay.
With Paul Ellering, defeated the Varsity Club of Steve Williams and Kevin Sullivan.
Okay.
For the NWA World Tag Team Championships. Ricky Steamboat defeated Ric Flair.
Yes.
For a singles match for the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, Chi-Town Rumble. That's where he got the championship strap that I think we were all hoping that he would have a chance to give a run for in the WWE, and he didn't. He comes to the NWA, defeats Ric Flair, and classic series of classic matches.
Well, and looking back in history now, as we sit back, how many 22 years later, and you see. That, I mean, that famous WrestleMania 3 match.
Mm-hmm.
And at this particular point in time, Randy Savage is the WWF Heavyweight Champion, and Ricky Steamboat now the NWA Champion.
Yeah, absolutely.
Both guys at the top of the two biggest companies in
absolutely.
North America.
I never thought of that, but that's a good point, though. Yeah. So the next big event that came around was a Saturday Night's Main Event on March 11th, where Brutus Beefcake defeated Rick Rude. Hulk Hogan.
What?
Hulk Hogan defeated...
Brutus Beefcake defeated Rick Rude?
Yep.
Holy shit. And this is before WrestleMania 5.
This is before WrestleMania
5. So this is before before Rick Rude wins the Intercontinental title.
Yes.
And before Brutus Beefcake fights, Dino Bravo?
I can't recall.
We'll
who
get to that.
Was it,
but
was
I mean,
it
definitely...
Was it Bravo or
I don't
Brutus
even
Brutus
know.
Five? I thought it was Kurt Hennig.
In Mania 5? No, 5 was Henning against the Blue Blazer.
Was 5 Henning and Blue Blazer? Okay. So was it 6 then that Beefcake fought Henning?
I believe it was, yeah, because that was around the time that the Genius was there. But anyway, I mean, we're getting
so
ahead
Bruce
of ourselves.
So Bruce Beefcake defeated Rick
Rude. Surprised by that result, that's all.
Okay. Well, he beat him by disqualification, though. I should mention that.
Yeah, well, still.
Still. Okay. And it was only a 5-minute match. Hulk Hogan defeated Bad News Brown.
Right.
Ted DiBiase defeated the Blue Blazer.
Really?
The Brainbusters fought the Rockers to a double countout. I remember that match. That was awesome.
I just actually saw that on Vintage not
Did
too
you?
Long ago.
Okay,
yeah.
And I'll give you a chance to talk about it then. And Red Rooster defeated Brooklyn Brawler in a minute. But
That match, it was just great. I mean, it wasn't really...
It was a minute, and it was before WrestleMania 5.
Match, I mean. Yeah, well, that was... The Rooster beat the Brawler, but then it was... Because it wasn't 5 Rooster against Heenan, right?
Against Heenan, yeah.
Yeah. That went about a minute as well.
It went about a minute as well. Yeah. That's right. So anything there you want to talk about? You say that match was fantastic. What are your memories of that match then, having seen it on Vintage,
favorite
television show?
Again, just one of those things. It was a great classic formulaic tag team match where, they get the heat on Jannetty and Michaels gets the hot. It was just a great match. And this was just right before the Busters in the summer would win the tag straps. So, just really setting up, some good, because everything was slower paced then. So
that's right.
This really set up, Rockers, Busters, house show for the tag titles.
Okay. All right. So that leads into WrestleMania 5, and where Hercules defeats King Haku.
See, very interesting here that they decided to do that, Hercules and Haku, because they had the DiBiase... they had the DiBiase Hercules things that they just decided. Again, you talk about, I just mentioned how slow paced that they were going, but really they blew that off at the main event.
They really did quickly and a surprise.
Who did DiBiase fight on this one? Was this DiBiase?
I'll get there. Let me run through it here.
If it is what I think it is, then it kind of makes some sense. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay. So Hercules defeated King Haku.
Mm-hmm.
The Twin Towers defeated the Rockers.
Yes.
Brutus Beefcake and Ted DiBiase fought to a double countout.
Okay, so it's Beefcake DiBiase. So that two things there, then that makes to me really no sense. The Hercules the Hercules blow off so quickly, because I was thinking that this is the one against Jake, but that they went straight there, but they didn't, because
they didn't,
this is going to be Andre Jake, as I sit back and remember this. But and then that also goes to the fact that Rick Rude losing by DQ to Beefcake, when Beefcake and DiBiase really had no issue.
Yeah, I mean, we always talk about how they had a plan and their long-term booking and all that stuff was better, but you kind of look back at this in order and you're kind of going, why? It does seem that it's a little bit strange that somebody wasn't building momentum the way you thought they would.
They still were, though, at this particular part of WrestleMania, and really for the first, I want to say the first eight, first seven or eight, the undercard, there were always a couple undercard matches that were just matches, and really there was no feud. You know, you had your Hercules's and your Hacksaws and your Dino Bravos and your Greg the Hammer Valentines and such, and Tito Santana's. They didn't seem to have really important things for a while. They just go, oh, you don't have anything, you don't have anything? Okay, you guys are going to have
it. Yeah, but at least they would give them each other. At least they would give them something.
Right.
They give them each other, which is something they don't do nowadays.
No.
Okay, so where was I here?
Perfect, or not perfect, sorry, you were DiBiase and Beefcake.
Oh, sorry, and my tablet just decided to get a little wacky here, so let me just find that again.
So you want me to continue to talk about DiBiase and Beefcake?
No, that's all right. So Beefcake and DiBiase, so the Bushwhackers defeated the Fabulous Rougeaus.
That's right, okay, and that was a...
Mr. Perfect defeated Blue Blazer in a match that went 5 minutes and 38 seconds. I remember thinking to myself heading into that 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 could have been the match that stole the show, but it just didn't go very
well.
Well,
and that's right, and I also remember after there was an interview at some point in Mania a couple matches later where Perfect beats Owen, then he issues a challenge backstage in an interview to Brett.
That's right.
Talk about how your father was a great wrestler. Well, my father was a great wrestler as well, and I think we could have I'd love to be able to beat you, and the excellence of execution, you're not perfect, and such. And I just thought it was funny because of course, being from Calgary here, too, and I mean, well, a lot of people knew that it was Owen, but we all around, just hearing him talk, knew that it was Owen, right?
Yeah.
So, that was just funny that he just beat Owen, and now he's challenging Brett, right?
Yeah, exactly. Okay, the Powers of Pain were defeated by a Demolition.
Powers of Pain,
Mr. Fuji with them. Not George Takei.
Love Mr. Fuji. Not George Takei, no.
No. Handicap match.
For
that was tag team championships.
Right.
That's right. Dino Bravo defeated Ronnie Garvin.
Told you.
Yeah. Brainbusters defeated Strike Force.
Right, and let's talk about this match, because this is a match where the Strike Force powers exploded.
That's right.
And Ricky Martel.
And it was this was a heel turn for Rick Martel.
It was.
Becomes the model shortly after this. They lost this match. And I do remember at the time, and I still think this, I don't think that they teased him turning at all. I think they just lost. Santana got the pin, and he got pissed off at
what
that.
This was that Ricky Martel was hurt for a while, and he was out of action for quite a while, and Tito was in singles competition for a while. And so this was the return of Strike Force. Strike Force hadn't teamed for a long time.
Okay.
And this was them coming back. So there was that, I remember them, there was that thing where, are they going to be on the same page because they haven't teamed for a while?
I recall now, yeah.
And it's like, you know, and then...
And because Tito really wanted to get back together and reform the team and have that success.
Yes, it was all
Tito. And Martel was kind of like, yeah, I guess
okay,
I should
because
we were a team before, but I don't really want to. That's right. That's
and,
right.
And then due to miscommunication, I think Ricky took the flying jalapeno. And he got knocked out, and then he was just looking at his face, and then he walked out on his partner, and the Brainbusters won. And actually, just a couple weeks ago, I was in Cocoa Beach, Florida, speaking of Rick the Model Martel.
All right, so Jake Roberts defeats Andre the Giant.
He wasn't there. Rick Martel.
Or Jake Roberts?
No, he was ruining weddings.
He was ruining weddings somewhere else. Singles match, and special guest referee,
Big John Studd. That's right, and this reprised the WrestleMania 1 body slam for cash feud, only flipping it because Big John was
And largely
face.
This was, I think, the reason why they decided to give Big John Studd the Royal Rumble, the push. you know, in case he was, in case they had plans for him and Andre again.
That's right. This time, never reversing really, the roles. They never really did.
They never really did. No. Well, I mean, both of them were really pretty beat up at this point as well. So.
Well, and of course, at this point,
Stud didn't really stick around long, actually, in this run either.
He didn't. No, he had this one. He kind of had the 1 year run here, and then he was gone. Not even the 1 year. I don't think he lasted all of '89.
Yeah.
I think he was gone by summer. You know.
The Hart Foundation.
Well, let's keep going on this, though. Of course, Andre the Giant, deathly afraid of snakes. That was the gimmick, right?
The gimmick was everybody was afraid of snakes.
Really the first big guy, though, the first huge guy, because later Earthquake was afraid of snakes.
Yeah.
And, you know, and when they would do this, but I'm trying to think of, there really wasn't anybody that was, like, so huge that was afraid of snakes before. They didn't really go that way, right?
Because
they had the thing against Honky, then he had the thing with Rude, and now this is against Andre.
Yeah.
This was really the first time where a giant, larger-than-life, monster psychological edge deal was going to be. And, of course, Andre liked to do that that tree spot, right, where he got his arms in the ropes, and, of course, then Jake could get the snake, and Andre could do the deal. So that was great.
And,
anyway,
this was, if you'll recall, when Jake Roberts returned in 1997, or 1996, and he returned to the Royal Rumble in 1996, and he had that little push he got, and they were talking about how he had turned his life around, was a religious man. He got to the finals against Steve Austin in the King of the Ring.
Yep.
And the match that they were always putting Roberts over and saying two things. Number one, they were saying he always had the best mind for the business. It's too bad his demons kept him back.
Yep.
And they always mentioned his biggest win of his career was defeating Andre the Giant at WrestleMania 5.
And it really
was. So it was a match that really was a horrible match, but a match that they built the legend up.
Well, but you know what, though? But that was the biggest win of his career.
It really was, yeah. And beating Andre at that point still meant something.
Well, beating Andre means more than winning the U.S. title right now.
Even if it was a DQ. Yeah, well, yeah. But, you know.
Oh, beating Andre by
beating,
you know,
my dick means more than the U.S. title right now.
Well, that's true, that little. But, I mean, beating Andre because he didn't show up at the building probably means more than winning the Intercontinental title at this point.
Yeah, exactly. So anyways, the Hart Foundation defeated Rhythm and Blues, the Honky Tonk Man, Greg Valentine.
Greg was in jet black hair mode.
Jet black hair here. And the match went 7 minutes and 40 seconds. How the hell was he going to get warmed up?
I actually forgot this match even existed. I was trying to think, what did Bret Hart do at WrestleMania 5? But yeah, that's right.
So let's talk about this one, though. Rick Rude defeated the Ultimate Warrior for the Intercontinental title.
That's right, the Intercontinental title. And
this was a huge shock to me watching this, because this was an event I watched at the Corral here in Calgary on closed circuit television.
This was
live.
I was there too.
But we're not with each other.
No, we didn't know each other then.
No. Way better.
But this was Bobby Heenan's first ever championship guy in WWF. This is the first guy to tie he's ever managed to a championship. Of course, the match back and forth, and then Heenan tripping Ultimate Warrior.
And then he held his
leg down. Just the one leg. He held the one leg down so Warrior couldn't kick out.
Couldn't get the lever to kick up.
So fucking simple.
And at the time, Warrior already was seeming like nobody could beat him. And even with this, you're like, I remember when it happened, because Hogan, he was getting this aura, nobody can beat him. When this happened, I remember leaving it and going, my friend Brett, who I watched it with, you'll recall Brett, he did some work for us on 2.5 Stone Men. Brett is turning to me, and he was really a huge Warrior fan, and I went, Warrior's not as good as Hogan. Hogan would have kicked out if a guy was just holding his leg. I've seen him do it before. So that was, you know.
Oh, and you said that to him just last week.
Yeah, well, he's still a big Ultimate Warrior fan.
Yeah.
That's why I found those drops for us.
That's right.
But Jim Duggan defeated, and Bad News Brown, they fought to a double disqualification. Bad News Brown had a history of double disqualifications, I guess, at WrestleMania.
Well, that was his gimmick,
brawler,
right?
That was his gimmick,
So, that was, not really too many memories of that other than really two brawlers going at it, right?
Exactly. Yeah. And the there was no women's match at this one, so the buffer match was Rooster and Heenan. a singles match, 32 seconds away.
32 seconds.
And then you had Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. This is a match that I think was actually a pretty good match. Hogan did some mat wrestling in this match. It was good intensity, and it went about 17 minutes 54 seconds, almost 20 minutes. And I thought it was a good little match, but a lot of people at the time did not think much of it. But I thought it was pretty good then. I think it's pretty good now.
Hogan bled, yeah. Which there wasn't. There wasn't a ban on blood per se that there is now or that later would be, but. It would be at WrestleMania 8, but it wasn't
TNA in every segment either.
There wasn't a lot of blood. You know, it was something that was used sparingly and to be special, and so this was just that time.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I remember being, you know, liking the match. I mean, it wasn't Hogan Warrior, but I remember, I can look back on this match and think it's one of Hogan's better matches.
I think so, too. I think it's a good match.
Yeah.
I think he looked good in this match. I think they had good chemistry, and it was a good match. So.
All right.
And it gave us the moment we wanted, which was Hogan winning it then.
That's right.
The same night, though, Clash of the Champions took place for free TV on TBS.
And
Clash of the Champions 6, Ragin' Cajun.
Ragin' Cajun. So Lash LaRue was in it.
Nope.
Oh.
It was a 5,300 people, 4.3 rating, which was pretty big at the time.
Wow.
And both figures. It was on TV, pre-TV. They were definitely firing, and they had done this before, and really after this, the WWE put their foot down, didn't let WCW continue this promotional tactic of putting on a big free TV show against their major pay-per-views.
What did you say the rating was? I'm sorry.
4.3.
And 5,300 people?
5,300 people.
So both figures, four times more than what TNA draws.
Yes. Yes. With the Samoan SWAT team defeating the Midnight...
With the same roster, probably.
Probably. Well, the Samoan SWAT team defeated the Midnight Express in a 20-minute match.
Okay, so
this
SWAT
Clash
team
of Champions,
later
a lot of people think of this Clash of the Champions as the best one ever, by the way.
Okay, Samoan...
So, and like I say, it goes free TV.
Let's explain Samoan SWAT team. Later go on to know them as the Head Shrinkers.
As the Head Shrinkers, that's right. That's right. And really, they were a team... They were, you know, obviously, guess what? They were Samoan.
Were they?
Yeah, no, they were.
Were they a team?
They were. They were not SWATs.
Oh.
Yeah. But they were.
I don't know
they
what
were,
to believe
they
anymore.
Were big. They were big guys who, though, could fly like small guys at the time was the gimmick.
Okay.
Great Muta defeated Steve Casey. Junkyard Dog defeated Butch Reed in a 10-minute match. Fuck
wow.
No. And remember, this was considered the best Clash of Champions.
Hey, yeah. It's...
Bob Orton defeated Rick Morton, or Bob Orton defeated Dick Murdoch in a 10-minute match. Varsity Club, Rotundo and Williams defeated the Road Warriors to win the NWA Tag Team Championship.
Wow.
By the way, their tag teams titles were pretty hot in 1989 in NWA. And Road Warriors versus Varsity Club was a really good match.
But the tag titles were hot in WWF at the time.
They were.
So, yeah.
But, they hear that. They might hear the Varsity Club defeated the Road Warriors and think, yeah, it's nothing worth seeing. It's worth watching. If you get a chance on YouTube, go track that one down. It's a good match. The Ranger Ross defeated Iron Sheik by DQ.
Really?
Yeah, 2-minute match.
The best Clash of the Champions ever, folks.
Yep. Rip Morgan, well, some people consider, but we'll get to that in a second. Well, we'll get to it in a second.
Maybe I'll change my mind. But you
Hot
just said
stuff.
Ranger Ross, and now you're going to say what? Rip?
Well, Rip Morgan ran in and attacked Ross, and then Junkyard Dog ran in and made the save. So
now, was this a point in time where Meltzer was calling him the Junk Food Dog?
It was.
Okay.
It was. Hot Stuff Eddie Gilbert and Rick Steiner defeated... Dan Spivey and Kevin Sullivan to retain the NWA United States Tag Team Championship.
Okay, so
I think it's, by the way, interesting to go that they had a World Tag Team Championship and then a U.S. or the equivalent of an Intercontinental Tag Team title at the time within the NWA. Ricky Steamboat then defeated Ric Flair in a 60-minute, well, I guess we wouldn't call it defeating, because it was a 60-minute time limit draw.
Mm.
2 out of 3 falls match to retain the NWA World Championship.
Can they do that every night?
Yeah, every night. The first fall, Flair pinned Steamboat after reversing an inside cradle in 20 minutes. Then Steamboat forced Flair to submit with a double chicken wing.
Awesome move. Yes, I remember that.
Wicked move, and I wish somebody was using that. It's just a great move. And Steamboat pinned Flair after a double chicken wing attempt. Flair fell on top of Steamboat. Both men's shoulders were down, but Steamboat got his left shoulder up before the three count. It was actually 55 minutes, 49 seconds.
Well, speaking of which, we're at 40 minutes here, and we're still in, what, March?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, anyway, Steamboat pinned Flair. Like I say, this match went 55 minutes, 49 seconds. Flair actually had his foot on the ropes, and I allowed for a rematch at the Russell War.
Okay.
Coming up. And when people say that this was the greatest, it's because a lot of people say that that match was the greatest match ever.
Right.
That match, that two out of three falls match. So.
Well, it had to be. Well, that and Ranger Ross.
That and Ranger Ross. Well, okay, but do you have any thoughts on that? Do you recall it all? That two out of three falls, chicken wing, double. You don't recall this match at all?
Nope.
Greatest match ever?
Nope.
Possibly? Mm-hmm. Greatest pure wrestling match many people's eyes ever?
It's overrated. No, it was a great match. I have seen that match. I have not seen anything else on this show. Actually, I think I might have seen the Road Warriors match.
That's an awesome
compilation
match. I think that it is that match was so great that it raises the.
The thing was, the image of the overall event. At this particular point in time, we're talking 22 years ago as well, is that, pretty much, no, I shouldn't even say pretty much, everything that Flair and Steamboat did at this particular point in time was memorable and was awesome.
It was memorable and awesome, but not drawing huge.
Well, no, it wasn't drawing, but it was great. But what we're looking at here is we're also talking about, okay, it's not drawing huge. Why is it not drawing huge? We just talked about Chi-Town Rumble. We talked about a Clash of Champions. We talked about, now we're talking about another Raging Cajun Clash of Champions. It's leading into a thing called Wrestle War. And we've talked about the main event, Royal Rumble, and WrestleMania,
yeah.
Right? And so you compare and you contrast those two where, they had some Saturday night main events in there that weren't, major shows. But really, WWF so far in the first quarter have had three major shows, and WCW or NWA is at least passing on to, what, five now?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
And in a shorter period of time. So you talk about why it's not drawing or why it's not, if it wasn't for Flair and Steamboat, I mean, I wouldn't be able to tell you what the hell's happening.
That's the thing is that's what people, like I say, that match was so great. Another thing is people did not see a 55-minute match on free TV back then.
Right.
I mean, you didn't see it, you don't see a 55-minute match on free TV now. You don't see a 55-minute match
hardly ever.
Unless it's scheduled to be an Iron Man match, you just don't see it.
And this is at the same night as Mania 5?
Same night as Mania 5. This was their way of countering it. Like I said, right. This last time they got away with that.
That's right. Because it used to be counter after counter.
Yeah, but how did Vince McMahon stop this promotional tactic from WCW? What was his response?
Well, no, I mean, and this...
Do you recall?
This happened is that... This has been going on for a while.
Yeah.
Okay. This was the last one.
This is the last one.
And what happened is that was the reason that the Royal Rumble was created. Vince started it.
Yeah.
And Vince created the Survivor Series.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince did the Royal Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And this was all just a counter. And then Crockett would counter with, they did Clash of Champions at WrestleMania 4.
That's right.
Where they made
Sting and Flair,
right? And now they're countering again at WrestleMania 5. And this is really it, because, they're saying, Vince is going, and it's not even Vince McMahon. This is the cable company saying, mm-hmm. Look, you know what? You guys got to stop this, because we're not going to put up with it anymore.
Exactly.
And we're not going to carry you if you do this. Now, there's been a couple times where they've had to do this. They were trying to run head-to-head
pay-per-view. Well, Vince said, though, that to people, that he said, I won't, he said, if you, he threatens cable companies to pull some of his programming.
Yeah, he threatened the pay-per-view things, that if you, or the cable companies, if you carry this, then I'm not going to give you Mania.
Yeah, exactly.
Or I'm not going to give you any of my stuff, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there was stuff like that that was going, the jockeying for position from a business perspective was going on back then, but really it was just, it was stupid. is what it was.
What do you think? What do you think? We go till the 6 months into the year here, a couple more months, and then call it for this show,
and then we can do a take two. Absolutely, that sounds good to me. All right, let's do the first half because we're sitting 44, almost 45 minutes in. So
yeah,
what's next? What's our next
warmed up yet?
Deal. No, not yet. We will be warmed up in about 45 seconds, actually, as it were.
Perfect. Okay, well, Sting, that same night, I just want to say Sting defeated Rip Morgan to retain the World Television Championship.
Why?
And Lex Luger defeated...
This is taken at 45 minutes. We're talking about Sting against fucking
Rip
Morgan.
And Lex Luger defeated Jack Victory.
Oh, good. Was that longer than when he took out the blackmailer?
It doesn't say, actually. Okay. But then that led into Russell War, May 23rd. Russell War, 1989. Another fantastic night. This night opened with Great Muta defeated Doug Gilbert, Butch Reed defeated Ranger Ross, Dick Morton. Jesus, I've done that twice now. Dick Morton. I'm having beer while we're doing this.
I know a guy named Murdoch. I know a guy named Morton, and he's a dick.
Dick Murdoch defeated Bob Orton Jr.
Okay.
The Dynamic Dudes.
Dynamic
Dudes defeated the Samoan SWAT team. With Paulie Dangerously.
Mm.
Michael Hayes defeated Lex Luger to win the NWA United States Championship, and that was quite an upset at the time,
actually.
That was,
yeah.
I don't know. I remember at that time that I'm watching it going, this Luger guy, he was doing every move. Every time he did a move, he would pose. That was essentially your... that was kind of your gimmick. He would do a move, he would pose, he was the baby face, and then Hayes was able to cheat to win.
Right.
Sting defeated the Iron Sheik in 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Scorpion Deathlock.
In a three-way.
with Rip Morgan was there, but it was not a three-way.
Oh, I thought it was the Iron Sheik and the Iron Sheep.
Oh. Have you noticed the Sheik is the new ROH, oh no, NWA champion?
Do you know
who the hell this guy is?
I tried to look him up. We're following him on Twitter now.
Oh, excellent.
So we can find out what's happening with the Sheik.
Excellent. And Ric Flair defeated Ricky Steamboat to regain the NWA World Championship in 31 minutes, 37 seconds.
And that was his, what, seventh world title right now?
I'm not sure how many it was, but I can tell you this. They had a gimmick where Terry Funk, Pat Connor, and Lou Thesz were outside the ring.
What day did you say this was?
This was May 23rd.
Okay, for some reason this was May 7th, but anyway.
Okay, so Funk, O'Connor, and Thesz, legendary wrestlers, their gimmick was that they were outside the ring as judges, and that every 15 minutes they would give their opinion on who was winning the match.
Mm-hmm.
In case it went to a 60-minute time limit draw,
like
the judges would determine the victory.
Two out of three, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they had a plan here.
They had a plan, but there was a further plan to it, because Ric Flair wins the match, and Ric Flair being a heel, but he wins it, and then what happens? Great angle.
And then it was a great angle as Terry Funk pile drove him through the table.
That's right. Well, what happened especially is he comes in and he's cutting it. Basically, they're talking to Flair in the ring. And this is in the middle of the card. And they're talking to Flair, and Flair's going, Ricky Steamboat was the greatest opponent I've ever had in my life. And it's a real thrill to regain the title. And and Terry Funk goes in and he goes, I just want to congratulate you. That was an unbelievable match. And thank you very much. And he shakes his hand and he walks away.
Right.
And then Ric Flair keeps talking. He's going, there's a lot of people I'm looking forward to meeting for the belt next, a lot of people who are going to be very, very impressive opponents. He's putting over all the potential opponents he's going to have. And Funk walks back in and just goes, I'm a former world champion, and if you don't mind, I'd like a shot at the title as well, right? And Flair's like, well, I appreciate what you've done. I appreciate everything you've accomplished, but there's a lot of top contenders right now. There's a lot of people that are currently being wrestling here, and you've been in retirement, and we're basically, there's a lot of people who are probably ahead of you in line. I'm sorry, but, and Funk goes, yeah, I understand, basically. And, mm-hmm. and Flair turns back, and he started again putting over his opponents and how great it is to be champion, and Funk comes and attacks him and beats the holy hell out of him. And as you say, he pile drives him through the table and leads to one of the funnest feuds I've ever had an opportunity to watch. So,
oh, yeah.
So, anything else you want to add to that?
I would just like to add that sometimes love is like a slow dance. First you tiptoe around, you don't make a sound.
Yeah.
But then sometimes love feels just right. It feels like an argument. It feels just like a pile driver.
A pile driver through a table.
Pile driver. And that was, we didn't see pile drivers through tables.
You didn't
ever
see anybody going through tables back then.
No.
You know? And you didn't see it again until, like, 1997 or 1996? When did you see it again?
Oh, God. Well, I mean, the ECW on a smaller scale. But,
well,
And there was the odd one, too. But, no, it was again, a special act. And it's really set up a Flair retirement deal. You know, where is Flair ever going to wrestle again?
Yeah.
I don't know the answer to that. Do you think he will?
I think he's probably... I don't think we've seen him since.
I'm trying
Funk.
To remember.
I don't think Funk's had a match since either.
Well, Funk, I mean, when he retires, he retires.
That's right. So anyways, after that, the Road Warriors defeated the NWA World Tag Team Champions of Varsity Club by disqualification in 6 minutes. And that was actually the main event of the show.
Wow.
Was the Road Warriors versus... And that's how big the Tag Team Championships was, but also partially because the Funk angle was going to go on. But unfortunately, that match was only 6 minutes. That one's not worth going to see, not like the one in Clash of Champions.
No.
And Eddie Gilbert and Rick Steiner defeated the Varsity Club to retain the NWA United States Tag Team Championships also on this night. And most importantly, Oak Ridge Boys performed at the show.
That's right. They did. That's right. Now, that's May 23rd.
That's May 23rd. We're May 27th, Saturday night's main event.
That's right. I remember
King,
this one more.
King Duggan defeated Rick Rude.
And why wouldn't he?
Randy Savage defeated Jim Neidhart. Hulk Hogan defeated the Big Boss Man.
That was the cage.
That was a cage match.
That was the cage, wasn't it?
That was the cage match. You bet. 10 minutes.
With Zeus.
That's right.
Okay.
Yep. And because it included clips from Hulk Hogan's first starring movie role, No Holds Barred.
That's right.
The Brainbusters defeated
the
Demolition.
Tag champions. They won the tag team titles here.
That's right. And Snuka defeated Boris Zukov. Anything else you want to add about that match or that night?
Well, I'd like to talk more about the Snuka Boris Zukov match.
Of course, you do.
Bad blood from AWA. But no, this Saturday night's main event had a couple things. The Brainbusters beat Demolition for the tag team championship, so they went on and started their first run with the tag titles. Their only run with the tag titles.
That was it. In the Fed, that was the only one they got.
Yeah, but no, I remember that, and that was a great moment. And you kind of thought you were going to see a tag title change there, but the big story coming out of this one was the superplex.
That's right.
Hogan superplexing the Big Boss Man from the top of the cage.
That's right.
And man, was that a spot.
That was a spot, because the Big Boss Man here was not the Big Boss Man. If you're thinking of the Big Boss Man in the Attitude Era, this was not the same guy. This Big Boss Man was about 100 pounds heavier.
It was Kerry Von Erich.
This Big Boss Man was about 100 pounds. He was also in lifts, so he's taller. But he was a legit, like, 370-pound man.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
Big
he was
Bubba.
A huge, huge guy. He lost a lot of weight when he became a babyface in the WWE later on. And then when he came back, also, he lost weight again when he was the Big Boss Man in the Attitude Era.
He also lost some weight when he was the boss. He also lost some weight when he was the man. He also lost some weight when he was the guardian angel.
Yeah.
And then
he put weight back on when he was the guardian angel.
He did. He really had to.
Yeah.
He'd take all those free handouts. But and then he also lost some weight when he was Big Bubba.
That's right. That's right.
So a couple WCW gimmicks he had.
Great ones. And we have two last events we're going to talk about then in July here, or June or whatever, I guess.
Was it the No Holds Barred opening?
No. But we will talk
I
some
was
more.
One of the
There's
four...
plenty of No Holds Barred to talk about in 1989 still to go.
Okay.
But Clash of the Champions then had another one, June 14th.
Wow, another one.
This one, yeah.
Why weren't these special?
Well, this one drew a 3.8 rating, so it was 0.5 down from the one that went head-to-head with WrestleMania. And this night, the Fabulous Freebirds.
Really, the Fabulous Freebirds.
The Fabulous Freebirds.
Wow, from Tokyo.
Oh, man, I'm drinking too much beer. No, I'm not. Fabulous Freebirds, Jimmy Garvin and Michael Hayes. By the way, that was the Freebirds in NWA in this era.
Jimmy Jam.
Terry Gordy was there with them, but the Freebirds were Jimmy Jam and Michael P.S. Hayes.
Was
pure sexy.
Was Dink there? Big Daddy Dink?
Nope.
Nope. And Bad Street wasn't there?
Nope.
Oh.
Don't think so.
Not yet, huh?
I don't think so. Anyways, they defeated the Dynamic Dudes.
Wow. Now, what Dynamic Dudes being Kurt Angle's idol.
That's right.
Shane Douglas.
Yep.
And Zach Gowen's idol, Johnny Ass.
Now, Jim Garvin, by the way, that was his first official night as the Freebirds, though they said he had unofficially been one since his time in Texas in 1983. Right. He had been undercover as one all that time.
Double secret probation.
And then this was actually, they were doing an NWA World Tag Team Title Tournament. And this was a semifinal. Mm-hmm. Leading to the semifinal, where the Freebirds defeated the Road Warriors.
Yes. Well, Michael Hayes really getting a push here in this time period. The Booker, who was booking this show?
I don't know who was.
Was this Dusty?
I think so.
Okay, no, just really because I
think in 1989 it was either Dusty or Ric Flair.
I'm just saying because you're looking at P.S. Hayes here winning the U.S. title, beating Lex Luger, and then going on and you know beating the Road Warriors here.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
I mean this is all Michael Hayes stuff. So
that's right. The most important match of the night, the Ding Dongs defeated Cougar J and Cougar South.
Oh, man.
Or George South. The Ding Dongs. Anything you want to fucking say?
No. No. Ding Dongs. We'll wait till next April to talk about the Ding Dongs. I mean, we didn't really get into the Ding Dongs for our April Fool's show, but they really, there was what, Ding and Dong? Is that what their
yeah,
names were?
I think something like that.
Holy
horrible,
shit.
Horrible.
Purple, big purple suits.
The other side purple of that tag team title or tournament had the Midnight Express defeating the Samoan SWAT team.
Man.
Yeah.
Great teams.
Great teams. Terry Gordy and Dr. Death Steve Williams and this night actually fought to a double count out. And that's a little bit interesting because they would become maybe some could argue. I mean, I'm not so sure I've ever seen a better tag team than the Miracle Violence connection of Gordy and Williams. A dominant team in Japan, and they had a run again in together as a team in WCW later on.
Oh, that was that's when we first got TBS here in Calgary.
1992.
And it was that's when the Steiner brothers against Williams and Gordy were just great matches.
Just like, awesome just, stuff.
It was so different from what you were seeing in the WWF at the time.
That so
it
much
was
more
just,
physical.
It was just exactly. It was that harder hitting, you know, physical style that you weren't getting from the likes of, I'm trying to think in 1992, who the tag team, you know, though I guess it was harder hitting, believe it or not, than the Nasty Boys against the Beverly Brothers.
It was. Now, Terry Gordy, I think, was a hell of a talent. And Dr. Death, I think, is maybe one of the 20 best I've personally ever seen. And I would think that those two could have had a magnificent match, but unfortunately it only went 6.5 minutes of double count.
Yeah.
Norman the Lunatic defeated Mike Justice.
One of my favorites of all time, Norman the Lunatic.
But not as Norman the Lunatic.
No, as Muck and Singh.
As Muck and Singh.
Who did he beat?
Mike Justice.
Oh, okay. So when I ask him who he ever beat, it's going to be Mike Justice.
It's going to be Mike Justice.
Okay.
The Varsity Club defeated the Steiner Brothers.
Okay, now who is was this?
This was Rotundo and Sullivan.
Okay.
Okay. Rotundo actually pinned Steiner after suplexing him onto a steel chair.
Oh, he pinned Steiner, did he?
Yeah.
Oh.
Scott Steiner.
Okay.
After suplexing him onto a steel chair. Scott. Scott.
Scott. And Scott was, the newbie.
He was the new guy,
the
younger brother.
He was the younger brother.
Rick Steiner had been part of the Varsity Club as a heel, and when his brother came in as a babyface, he teamed with his brother and he turned to the babyface.
Well, we talk about as a heel, Rick Steiner was the precursor to George the Animal, or I guess he was going on after
the
Animal, but before Eugene, right? He was the dumbass, the simple-minded guy. What did he have? He had some sort of little mascot-y thing.
Yeah, he did,
Mr. Socko, but he had something very similar that I don't remember. Anyway, but he was a simpleton, essentially, is what it was.
Exactly.
Was,
but, you know, but, yeah, much a less, lovable simpleton.
You know, a lovable simpleton as opposed
but
to his
was
later run
in the ring.
Against Vordell Walker, who was just a dickhead simpleton.
That's right. Sting defeated Bill Irwin. And
the Goon.
That's right. And
who beat the Goon, sorry?
Sting.
Stinger
Splash.
How long did that match go?
3 minutes and 14 seconds.
Okay. Well.
Not even as long as a fight you get in hockey.
No, that's right. Or
so,
a penalty for
a fight, yeah. Sting defeated him, and then the NWA World Tag Team Tournament final. I don't even remember how the titles became vacant leading into this, unfortunately. But Fabulous Freebirds defeated the Midnight Express. With Bob Eaton and Stan Lane.
So this was a single night tournament?
This, well, no. It had opening rounds earlier. This was the semifinals and finals.
Here. Okay, semifinals and finals. Okay.
Yeah. And I would, I mean, I don't recall that match. I think that's a match I'm going to go out of my way to see, because I think seeing Jimmy Jam and Michael P.S. Hayes versus Sweet Stan Lane and Bobby Eaton with Jim Cornette in the corner,
mm-hmm.
how the hell can that not be fucking awesome?
Well, it could if the Freebirds are their, you know, their sideshow attraction itself at this point, which I'm not sure if they are. So
what you're saying is they may have been into the gimmicks?
No, I'm saying sideshow attraction in terms of if they had Bad Street and they had Big Daddy Dink or they had Diamond Dallas Page.
Yeah, I can't recall.
You know, at this point, I don't know. So,
but Paulie Dangerously was also got involved in this match, and then Ricky Steamboat defeated Terry Funk by disqualification, 14
right,
minutes.
Yes,
and that I remember that one. Funk hit Steamboat with a microphone
mm-hmm.
that actually led to the I Quit match between Funk and Ric Flair later
Funk
on.
And Flair, yeah,
yeah. And that was just fantastic stuff. So that basically brings us about 6 months into 1989.
We're halfway through 1989.
We're halfway through. That's the end. That's June of 1989. So we're halfway through. What do you say we cut it and come back on the second half of 1989 a little later on? Some great stuff coming up, folks.
There was some great stuff. So let's wrap this up. So we'll do that for part one of 1989 here. But we'll promise you a much more condensed version of part two here in the meantime and in between time. That's it. Another edition of We Talk Wrestling. I wanted to make mention that it's wetalkwrestling.podomatic.com is our website. Wetalkwrestling.blogspot.com is where you can read our blogs, our thoughts and opinions. And wetalkwrestling@aim.com is our email. Hit us up. We're going to hit some mailbag questions in the coming weeks here, because they're starting to pile up a bit. And also want to make sure We Talk Wrestling, you can follow us on Twitter as well, and we follow you back. So hopefully you can hit us up there. And so, as I said, in the meantime, in between time, that's it.
One last thing I just want to say.
Oh, yeah?
Just in case anybody's wondering, Addy found his Edge and Christian so reeking awesome his shirt, and he's wearing that since 1972,
I believe,
and
yes.
He's wearing that currently as we record
I'm
this show. That's fantastic.
Wearing my ENC shirt because I found it there. Yes, in honor of Edge's retirement. So
yes.
Something that we made.
By the way,
about.
I hate to tell you this, but I'm actually retiring, and you're being fired.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Well, then we may not get to part two. No. We will get to part two. And
that just means we'll be back for the next show.
Yeah, exactly. So, all right. In the meantime, in between time, that's it. Another edition of We Talk Wrestling. Good night, folks.